This is the Big E Sports Show
on the Sports Map Radio Network from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios.
Here's Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Okay, here we go. Hour two, Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. Thank you so much for carving out time and joining us on this Saturday. I'm your host, Alyssa Walker Campbell. Love to hear from you live on Twitter at eRadio Sports. And perhaps you missed one of our guests in hour one or in hour two, podcastarena.com. My producer, Jack McCraw, give him a follow on Twitter at the Jack McCraw. And Jack, we are looking so forward to Super Bowl 55. We've been getting our guests ready and our audience. So it is a superstar showdown. Which quarterback, you know, we've been talking about, who do you trust more? But who are you perhaps leaning more towards, Mahomes or Brady?
I'm leaning more towards Mahomes, surprisingly enough. Now, me being a huge Tom Brady fan, I feel weird saying this, but when that Kansas City Chiefs offense is rolling, nobody can stop them. Tyreek Hill is probably the fastest wide receiver in the league. Travis Kelce is the best tight end. And now you have Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who should be back, N'Keal Hardman. You just have so many offensive weapons. It's as if Patrick Mahomes went to Home Depot, bought all of the best tools in the garden, and now has the best garden. And Tom Brady himself has some really nice tools, too, with Mike Evans, Scotty Miller, Antonio Brown should be back. The list goes on and on. It's going to be an offensive showcase, but I got to give the edge to Andy Reid's offense with Patrick Mahomes.
Okay, so you lean towards Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid's offense, but was this season more impressive than anything that Tom Brady has done in the past? I mean, thinking about, you know, adapting to a new system, a new coach, and new teammates.
I would compare it to his 16-0 season with the New England Patriots, where he had Randy Moss. And they were just dynamic. They were the best team in football that unfortunately didn't win. Mike Evans is the second best wide receiver Tom Brady has ever played with. Let's think about that for a second. He's had a bunch of no-name guys in New England that he's turned into superstars, a la Julian Edelman, Wes Welker, Danny Amendola. The list goes on and on. He now finally has amazing weapons, and including Antonio Brown, as previously mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. I think that this is the... It just shows that Tom Brady can work in multiple systems, and he wasn't just a system quarterback in New England with Bill Belichick. And this just over-exemplifies the fact that he is one of, if not the best quarterback of all time.
That's right. And the Bucs, they beat the Packers 31-26. And you have to wonder, as we get ready to go to break, will Matt LaFleur regret not letting Aaron Rodgers go for it on fourth down?
That's a fair question to ask, and I think he'll absolutely regret it. I think the Packers had a missed opportunity, and they could have been the Super Bowl right now, E.
Stick around. Much more coming your way. Sports Map Radio Network. We will be right back.
This is the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Okay, welcome back. Hour two, Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. Connect with us this morning live on Twitter at eRadio Sports, info at eRadioSports.com, podcastarena.com. We're going to talk some college football. Big movement in the offseason at the University of Texas as they have a new head coach with Steve Sarkisian. It didn't take long for them to get him on board after they fired Tom Herman, who went 32-18 in his four seasons at Texas. So we are delighted to have back with us one of our guests that we always go to that covers Texas, and that, of course, is Steve Habel, who is the college football correspondent for Field Level Media. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, Alyssa. Thanks for having me on again.
It's great to have you back on the program. Happy New Year, first time on in 2021. So talk to us about why Texas felt that Steve Sarkisian was the right man for this job.
Well, he's the hot commodity among assistant coaches in college football. You know, Sarkisian has been a head coach before and had some success at Washington and USC, and he can call a heck of a game when you've got a bunch of stud racehorses at Alabama. And I think that game against the national championship game against Ohio State was an indication of what Texas people think he can bring to Austin. But doing that actually remains to be seen, Alyssa.
Mm-hmm. Veteran sports writer, covers the Longhorns, Steve Habel, our special guest at Sports Map Radio Network. Give us the pulse. I mean, how do Texas fans feel about Tom Herman's firing and Steve Sarkisian's hiring?
Well, I think everybody's pretty optimistic about things around here, but, you know, the proof is in the pudding in Austin, Alyssa. You know, Coach Herman, as you stated, his record earlier has done pretty well here. He's never had a losing season as a total, which can't be seen about Charlie Strong, his predecessor. But he He didn't beat Oklahoma. He beat them once in five times. He didn't win any conference championships. To be quite honest with you, Coach Herman was not the most likable person, and I think that kind of backed up on him. So Texas decided to go with the latest flavor of the month, which seems to be Sarkisian. Like I said, you're going to have to find a way to beat Oklahoma in Big 12 Conference, and the rest of the conference is pretty salty, too, with Iowa State and just about everybody else being better. So Coach Sark has his work cut out for him in Austin.
Okay, so Steve Sarkisian, you talk about how he was the hot commodity as far as coaches on the market. But ultimately, I mean, can he elevate Texas back to national prominence? I mean, you're talking about, and they have to beat Oklahoma.
You know, let's talk about national prominence first for Texas, Alyssa. You know, people talk about Texas as being such a storied program, and they were in the 60s and 70s, but Texas has won two conference championships since 1994. And both of them were undefeated regular seasons when they won the national championship, two conference championships. You know, they won the national championship and they beat USC after the 2005 season and then lost to Alabama and after the 2009 season. And, you know, Texas hasn't won any conference championship since then. Oklahoma has dominated. So, you know, the thought of Texas being a preeminent college football program is still not completely on the table, Alyssa. I mean, Texas just has to take baby steps, and the first baby step is to be able to beat Oklahoma and try to claim something of that instead of thinking about national prominence at this point.
College football correspondent for Field Level Media, Steve Habel, our very special guest at Sports Map Radio Network. You bet we're talking some college football. So pull back the curtain and share the details on Steve Sarkisian's contract, because what Texas still owes Tom Herman about, what, $15 million to buy out the final 3 years of his contract, and they still owe, what, another $10 million for the remaining contracts of their assistants. I mean, man, you go to Texas, they pay you well.
Yeah, they do. They pay you well not to coach. They did that for Charlie Strong too. All my buddies who are college football coaches looking for that long-term contract, because I mean, if they get fired, they're still playing some golf somewhere and having some fun. I think they gave Coach Sarkisian a 7-year contract for about $35 million. It's what proposal is. I mean, it hasn't gone to the Regents yet, which has to prove that. But it's pretty much in terms of what they had for Coach Herman, around $5 to $6 million a year. And that's pretty much the going rate for a top-notch college coach these days. Not the Nick Saban numbers, but pretty close to that. There's been a lot of talk about the buyout for Coach Herman here, especially during the coronavirus when people have had to take furloughs and people have had to take a cut, but the athletic departments haven't been able to make money like they normally do, not even in Texas. So, that was a big deal, but I think Texas has the deep-pocketed boosters that were able to take care of that for them. And other schools don't have that. So that's not as big of an issue here as it is at some other schools.
Well, some say Steve Sarkisian was a risky hire from his past, but worth the gamble. I just have to wonder, you know, what kind of impact will he have with recruiting?
Well, he knows he doesn't know hardly anything about Texas high school football, except for what he was doing is recruiting as basically an interloper from another college or from out of state. But he has to build those relationships. I think Coach Sark has a pretty good grasp of national recruiting. He'll bring a lot of players from California, maybe even some from Alabama because of his work there with the Crimson Tide and then as assistant coach for Atlanta in the NFL. So he's a big name. I think people are excited about seeing what he can do with the talent Texas already has. Mm-hmm. The talent he had at Alabama was otherworldly. When you got three guys out of the five going to the Heisman Trophy ceremony that play for your team. You got some pretty good players. I mean, and Ohio State was pretty good too, but I mean, they couldn't keep up with what Coach Sark had for them on that national championship game. So, you know, let's see. Time will tell. You know, in Texas, it's all a recruiting game, but I always think that the best coaches are people who can coach up players. Once you get them on campus, you know, guys like Matt Campbell at Iowa State, who doesn't hardly ever get a 4 or 5-star recruit, but, you know, he still wins games. And guys like Texas Tech and Kansas State. you know, when you get them on campus, you still got to coach them up a little bit.
Okay, we are wrapping up our time. College football correspondent for Field Level Media, that is Steve Habel. Next time we have you on the program, we're going to talk about what kind of team does Steve Sarkisian inherit, and that quarterback position, the big battle between Casey Thompson and Hudson Card. So we'll talk during spring training, okay?
Okay.
You bet. Stick around. Much more coming your way. Sports Map Radio Network. We will be right back.
This is the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, welcome back. Hour 2, Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. You're listening to The Voice. I am Alyssa Walker-Campbell. Love our audience and our listeners. You guys are amazing. Check us out live on Twitter at eRadio Sports. Info at eradiosports.com. Podcast arena.com. Well, the countdown is on. It is time to get you ready for Super Bowl 55 here in hour two. We are just 1 week away. And right now, we're going to focus in on the quarterback. And that, of course, is Tom Brady. He is the biggest reason Tampa Bay is going back to the Super Bowl, in my opinion. And we're looking forward to talking about his legacy. And perhaps, is he the GOAT? Is he the best player ever in NFL history? We are delighted to welcome to the program prolific author of 5 books. He is a football historian, and that is Sean Glennon. Happy New Year, Sean.
And you too, Alyssa.
Okay, so time to focus our attention on perhaps the best player in the NFL history as we talk about Tom Brady. So he is chasing his 7th Super Bowl championship at the ripe young age of 43. It's such a great story in sports. So how impressed are you that Tom got the best of Aaron Rodgers at Lambeau Field and beat the Packers?
Well, you know, oddly enough, I'm very impressed. It's not an easy thing to do. I expected him to do it. I just felt like the Bucks matched up well against the Packers. And I hate saying this because I think I have a ton of respect for Aaron Rodgers, but he does have a tendency to sort of fall apart in games like that. And we saw it again.
We absolutely did. As I think about Tom Brady, here he is, 43 years of age. I just mentioned that. And it seems like he got better in his first season with Tampa Bay. I mean, you have followed him for many years. In fact, you are the author of Tom Brady versus the NFL. I mean, as you step back and evaluate, what did you see this year?
It's fairly astonishing to me what we all saw with Tom this year. When he signed with Tampa, I thought that the first thing that came to mind when they announced that he was going there was the offensive line of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers that had, really exposed James Winston a year ago. And I don't say that to let Winston off the hook, but he got killed behind that line. And so a lot of it had to do with, just the quality of that line. And they hadn't improved it any. And I just thought, Tom Brady is going to be 43 years old. He has spent his entire career in New England, where the offensive line, talent evaluation and coaching is famously outstanding. He's going to get behind that porous Tampa Bay offensive line, and by the middle of the season, he's going to be feeling like he's 86 years old, and we're never going to see Tom again. And boy, was I ever wrong! It's not the first time I've been wrong about Tom Brady, or the biggest, but it's a pretty big one because he's doing things that supposedly he wasn't able to, supposed to be able to do in New England, the deep passes. And he's doing it with an offensive line that, and frankly, in my opinion, is suspect.
We point out Tom Brady. I mean, it has been a tremendous team effort. And you are the author, as I just mentioned, of Tom Brady versus the NFL. Our very special guest this morning at Sports Map Radio Network is Sean Glennon. What has been the key to Tom's longevity? Here we're talking about how he's been able to kind of recreate himself and his ability to adapt to a new head coach, new teammates, and a brand new system. How does he do it?
I think that the big difference for Tom is that sort of football intelligence that has sort of stood out for him. From the moment he arrived in New England, he well known as for believing in himself and the hours he puts in, all that, and I don't discount any of that stuff. I think he's the complete package. He just loves the game and he loves to compete. On his side, he'd probably tell you about, because it's not, he doesn't eat tomatoes and all that weird sort of nutritional stuff he does.
Uh-huh.
But You know, I just think like it's the same thing that made him the perfect quarterback for Bill Belichick's system, that he internalized that system. You know, he can look at a defense and know what's coming. He's just got this amazing football intelligence, and then he keeps himself healthy so that he can execute against what he sees.
What do you think Bill Belichick is thinking right now? And you have to wonder, I mean, I'm sure he's going to be watching the game, but what's going through his mind?
You know, I'm sure that Coach Belichick is going to be rooting for Tom and Tampa. I know that nobody gets along with Bill Belichick all the time, and that includes Tom Brady. I think that there's a great fondness between those two people for each other. And I really, you know, those of us in New England keep hearing, there's a certain, group of Patriots fans and a little bit of the Boston media that wants us to believe that, you know, the Patriots made a big mistake by letting him go. If they hadn't, it would be, you know, them in the Super Bowl against whomever. It wasn't going to happen. The team was out, you know, the team was in real cap trouble for the first time, probably in the Belichick era. They were not going to have the kind of success that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are having this season. And you know, nobody here in New England wants to hear it, but they're probably at the beginning of a 2 or 3 year rebuilding phase. Belichick knows that, and you know, the best thing that he could do for Tom was to let him go and play out the end of his career somewhere where he has a real chance to have some success. I just don't think it was happening here. He could have got him into the playoffs, and maybe they would have won a game, but not to the Super Bowl.
Our very special guest is Sean Glennon, author of 5 books. His latest was the author of Tom Brady versus the NFL. And, you know, what do you think the relationship is between Tom Brady and Bill Belichick today? And I just have to wonder, I mean, does he regret losing him to the Bucs? I mean, was that a bitter breakup?
Yeah, I can't imagine that, you know, Belichick is thrilled that, you know, the greatest quarterback of all time is playing for somebody else's team. But, you know, as I said, I think, you know, Belichick knows that the Patriots were going to have a few down years. You know, if he could have kept Tom, they probably would have, you know, posted, you know, winning records, even if they were 9-7, and he wouldn't be getting questioned the way he is now. But I have to believe that those guys have built up a relationship over all those years in which they're going to be happy for each other's success. Look, guys that compete at that level are always going to be competitive and want to have done better than the other guy. But I think that there's got to be a piece of Belichick that sort of, you know, that looks at what Tom's doing and just thinks, you know, good for Tom.
Well, Patrick Mahomes looks to join Tom Brady as the only quarterback to win 2 Super Bowls in its first 4 seasons. So are there some comparisons when we look at Patrick Mahomes and Tom Brady? They say that Patrick Mahomes, he is going to be the future GOAT.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of comparisons. You know, obviously the success at a young age, I think that sort of, you know, the stuff that people look at and you know, when they want to elevate Mahomes, it's way too early to do it, over Brady, that sort of instinct for the game, that crazy thing that he does where he's, you know, he's running to the right sideline and he throws a blind pass 2/3 of the way across the field and hits it. You know, that stuff is the stuff that wows everybody. But, you know, what I really focus on when I see Mahomes is his level-headedness, his obvious, you know, grasp of the game, like an understanding of the mechanics of football and of his coach's system. And those are the kind of quarterbacks who do succeed over the long term. I don't know if anybody's ever going to get to, you know, 10 Super Bowls again. And, I don't know what the standard is for overtaking Brady in that greatest of all time argument. But Mahomes certainly has the qualities that can get you there if your circumstances line up.
You know, Sean, it's so fascinating. When we think of Patrick Mahomes and Tom Brady, these guys weren't the number one pick in the draft. What have we learned from watching their careers?
Yeah, I think we've learned that there's there are things that sort of defy, you know, football scouting, particularly a scouting system that's based on, you know, has a lot to do with where you went to college and what your, you know, what your coach was like there, what he thought of you, but also, you know, the stuff that they measure at the combine. I think the combine is really valuable, it just never tells the whole story, you know. And you can put, you know, Montana in that group too.
Yeah.
Like, these are people who they have qualities that make them great football players. That it's not the fault of scouting. It's just that there's no sort of scouting that stuff.
So Tom Brady, 43 years young, I guess the ultimate question is, and we got to talk about this, Sean, I mean, like, How long do you think he's going to continue to play? I mean, will he retire if he wins another Super Bowl 1 week from today?
You know, it's funny. I think people have been asking me that question for like 6 or 7 years
now. It's
so
true.
and my answer is always the same. Like, I thought he was, you know, I thought he'd be done by now. You know, he keeps saying he's going to play to age X, and I keep saying he is not going to be able to do that, and he doesn't. If Tom Brady came out tomorrow and said, you know, I want to play till I'm 50, you'd kind of have to take him at his word. Mm-hmm. I sort of suspect that I don't think this is the end for him, win or lose the Super Bowl. I think he still probably feels like he has more to prove. I also think he looks to me like a guy who's having a lot of fun playing the game of football. I don't see him walking away. And the other thing is that the great ones never walk away until it completely falls apart. I think Tom Brady's, whatever his last season in the NFL is and whatever team he's with, it's going to be a disaster because he's going to be one of these guys who just doesn't know that he's lost it. But I think that's 2 or 3 years away, if even that close.
Oh my gosh, that's crazy to think about. So, you know, as we reflect on this past year, I mean, in your mind, though, was this season more impressive than anything that he has ever done before throughout his career?
In ways, it certainly is to me, and my friends in New England aren't going to like me for saying that.
Uh-oh. But
some of that stuff I talked about earlier with this performance, these 40 touchdowns, and another 6 in the postseason, throwing the ball deep, which supposedly, you know, his whole career we've heard that he couldn't do it, you know, except when he had Randy Moss. The accuracy with you throwing that deep ball, and the fact that he's doing it all behind, you know, in a new system that with no preseason and behind what has been one of the worst offensive lines in football for several years now that didn't improve in the offseason. Like, I don't know how you look at those accomplishments at age 43 and go like, oh yeah, but he was better he was better when he was 24. He wasn't.
So Tom Brady hopes to avenge the Week 12 regular season loss against Kansas City. I mean, will they be the last team standing?
I think they can be. You know, it's hard to count. You know, we always say you don't ever want to count out a team with Tom Brady at quarterback. And the same can be true of the set of Patrick Mahomes. So if this game turns into a shootout, it feels, which everyone expects it to be, it feels like whichever team has the ball last. But I think, you know, one of the things that, you know, I keep talking about that Tampa Bay offensive line, and I've waited for it to catch up with them. I don't see it catching up with them against Kansas City. They're not a great pass rushing defense, and that's what you got to be able to do to disrupt Tom. I think if the Bucs can keep the ball on the ground, play ball control, you know, chew clock, and let Tom do the things that he does best when you need him to, I think they have a really great chance. I'm looking for them to win this game.
Well, you know, I have to wonder, too, as we wind down our time, Sean Glennon, our very special guest, Sports Map Radio Network, football historian, a Patriots author. I mean, is this turnaround proof that Tom Brady is the greatest free agent signing ever?
Yeah, well, he's certainly the best one-year free agent signing ever. We'll see what happens over the next couple of years. But, you know, there's probably a couple other candidates out there in the past, but right now, he certainly turned around a losing franchise and got them to the Super Bowl. They were never getting anywhere close to it with anybody else at quarterback, so it would be hard to overlook that accomplishment.
Oh, it's just been an amazing run, and we're looking forward to the big game. The countdown is on for Super Bowl 55. Our very special guest has been Sean Glennon, author of Tom Brady versus the NFL. As I said, Patriots author and football historian. Sean, connect with our audience. Where can they check you out online?
They can find me at SeanGlennon.com. That's my website. I don't do much there. Better to find me, frankly, on Twitter, where my name is my handle. So
it's right.
Sean spelled like an Irishman and Glennon like John Lennon with a G in front of it.
Gotta love the wonderful world of Twitter. Listen, you stay safe. We look forward to another conversation. All eyes will be on next weekend.
Thanks so much for having me, Alyssa.
You bet. Stick around. Much more coming your way. Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. We will be right back.
This is the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network.
from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Okay, welcome back on this Saturday morning, Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. I'm your host, Alyssa Walker Campbell, and many different ways to connect. We are always live on Twitter at eRadio Sports. Info at eRadiosports.com and podcastarena.com. Hey, before your travel begins, visit O'Reilly Auto Parts. Simple preventative maintenance before you go will ensure a safe journey. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Well, the NBA conversation continues, and right now we're going to head out west and shine the spotlight on the Utah Jazz. They are rolling this season. They're the hottest team in the NBA right now. And delighted to have back with us the Jazz television play-by-play announcer, and that's the great Craig Bowlerjack. Good morning, Craig.
Alyssa, how are you?
I'm doing great. Happy New Year. And what a season this has been for the Jazz in the first month. You guys are at the top of the Western Conference standings. So break it all down. I mean, give us the who, what, why has been the key to this early season success.
Well, how much time have you got? I got to be honest, there's a lot of storylines of this Jazz team this year, Alyssa. Honestly, I got to start with probably Mike Conley, who is back healthy and running the point for the Jazz. Last year when he came over from Memphis, injured early, and then I think just the transition after 12 years with the Grizzlies and trying to understand the Quinn Snyder system was a big challenge for him. And I think a lot of times people think, well, look, a 12-year veteran can make that transition, with a blink of an eye. And I think in this case, it didn't happen that way. Donovan Mitchell was growing and still is at that time, and working with him in the backcourt, Joe Ingles handles the ball, Bojan Bogdanovic handles the ball, and now Jordan Clarkson, handles the ball. So it wasn't all on Mike, and I think he felt like it was. He really started to find his game before we hit COVID in March, and then kind of rediscovered again in the bubble in Orlando. But I think just him being back and playing Mike Conley basketball with Donovan in the backcourt has made a big difference. He's an improved player from three, and also his assists are up this year to nearly six a game. So I think Mike Conley's really a big key to this. Donovan's growth is the other. Gobert's chip on his shoulder to continue to dominate the NBA defensively. And the other part of this equation, I think, is Jordan Clarkson's emergence as one of the top, if not the top six man in the NBA. What a pickup for the Jazz midseason last year when they traded Dante Exum up to Cleveland and got Jordan Clarkson back. And then, Alyssa, he actually made his own decision as a free agent to come back. He signed a four-year contract, and I think it sent a message to the Jazz and the fan base and maybe the West, the Western Conference teams, that, look, he found – his system, his groove, and he is really performing right now at a high level. So that's just some of the tidbits of why the Jazz, I think, are running hot right now at 14-4.
You highlight so many of the key players, leading off with Conley, but we've got to recognize the defense. I mean, that has been a big reason for this winning streak. So when you look at the stats, I mean, when you look at the ratings defensively, I mean, what do the numbers tell you, Craig?
Well, I think you see team defense, team basketball. Look, everybody always puts the spotlight on Gobert, who's a two-time, defensive player of the year. But they also understand their role with him. And, this is kind of complicated because Quinn demands you play defense. And if you don't, you don't get a lot of minutes. But I think with going back to Conley for a moment, he seemed to be a little bit confused on what that meant because he played with Marc Gasol in Memphis that was more of an offensive threat. Yeah, he went down and battled in the paint at the old grindhouse, so to speak, as you know. But I think that Mike even says that he understands now Rudy's role better. And I think Donovan does, and I think Royce O'Neal, who's another part of this equation defensively. It's a team defense concept. But also Gobert's the anchor piece, but he can't do it all. And I think there were times where the Jazz just kind of laid back and said, hey, Rudy, go do your thing. But in reality, he still needs help. And they understand now rotations better. And I've never seen a team in these 10 games, Alyssa, honestly, where they are in sync. And it's kind of a fun thing to watch. I know it sounds corny, but is it what, a ballet? I mean, it's an amazing thing to see. As they rotate around, and Rudy is the centerpiece, but the other pieces that flow around him. And I think that's really what the Jazz have done so well thus far.
You know, as a perimeter player, I mean, you can pressure the ball that much more because you've got, as you said, the word anchor. I mean, you've got Rudy on the inside. So in case you get beat, I mean, he's got your back defensively.
Yeah, and I think all these players, you know, and these Zoom calls that we've been going through this year, which is difficult, as you know, they all relate to that same comment. Is it's rotation, it's knowing Rudy's there, but they don't have to overhelp, and they can go out and really concentrate on their own man too, knowing Gobert is there to help them as that anchor. So the other piece, I think, defensively too, honestly, is the return of Derek Favors. And, they haven't lost as much as they did last year when Rudy was off the floor. Nothing against Tony Bradley, young kid out of North Carolina that was just starting to kind of become a confident player in this league. Takes time. But with Derek Favors' return, there's been less, honestly, of a drop-off with that second unit defensively. He's been a big plus to have back.
We are shining the spotlight on the Utah Jazz. Utah Jazz play-by-play announcer. Also, you can check him out on Jazz Insider for 1280 The Zone. That is Craig Bowlerjack. Give him a follow on Twitter, at BuckleUpBowler. So, you know, nationally, what were the expectations for the Jazz coming into the season? I mean, we talk about the Western Conference. All eyes are on the Lakers and the Clippers. Where were the Jazz? Were they a bit slighted? Were they a bit, perhaps, overlooked?
They were. You know, last year at this time, they were talking about the Jazz being at this level. And so maybe the so-called experts were a year ahead of themselves. Uh-huh. But, you know, when you have AD and LeBron, why not? When you have Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, I get it. The Jazz, they have young stars in Donovan and Rudy, who were both all-stars last year. But again, young and growing, and you're looking against the Lakers and the Clippers, the LA connection, that have just bona fide all-stars and obviously longtime veterans in this league. And I think what you're seeing is the Jazz growing into that. Two stars, two young stars that are starting to understand their role and the pressures that go with, you know, playing and winning, Elisa, every night in this league, which is a buzzsaw most of the times, especially in the Western Conference, because it's very competitive. But this year, maybe the pressure's off a little bit. Last year, there were a lot of expectations to challenge the Lakers and the Clippers. They played well in the bubble, but as you know, really, they blew a 3-1 lead against Denver. Denver went on to knock off the Clippers the same fashion. And Donovan Mitchell made a very strong statement: this will never happen again. And I liked it because, again, I think it shows growth, but also shows determination. And as he is the leader of this team, both on the floor and in the locker room, it was a statement that I think all 15 guys took to heart. And, you know, do they have the big three? No. Do they have a solid base? Absolutely. But they have something, Elisa, that a lot of teams don't, and that's that concept of team. Mm-hmm. It almost has a college feel to it at times, but I think they still are on the same page. I know it sounds a little outrageous, but this team, as I know them, all kind of have this similar goal, is to prove critics wrong. And right now, it's you know, the spotlight's on them, and they're taking it and taking it well.
So, Craig, what is head coach Quinn Snyder's message to his team so that these surging expectations, they don't become a distraction, and they continue to play, as you're talking about, team basketball?
Yeah, well, here we go. It's typical coach speak. I love Q. I mean, he's very he's very straightforward and doesn't like to talk about streaks. I mean, he will direct you off the road in a hurry when you start talking about 10-game win streaks. Look, his whole philosophy is the one game at a time thing. That's not real sexy, is it, to talk about?
Sure.
But in reality, that's kind of the way he approaches and tells these guys, Don't think too far ahead. You know, tonight's the night, and then we'll take care of tomorrow. And, you know, I guess it works for this team. You know, he's very much in control, but yet at the same time, he has loosened the reins on this team, Elisa, as I've never seen before, and that is with the three-point shot. I think he finally realizes, along with team management, that they surrounded themselves, Gobert, defensively with some good defenders, but also some outstanding three-point shooters. And right now, he says the green light is bright green. Shoot the damn ball. Do it. Get it done. And that's the way the West has really become, really the whole NBA. But in the West, you know, there was a day the Houston Rockets and the Phoenix Suns set that tempo, and then came along a guy named Steph Curry and then Klay Thompson, and it really, really made the league, you know, stand back and say, well, the power game is one thing, but analytics tell you the three is more than two, right? So yeah. The Jazz have gone along with that, and they have five players shooting over 40% from behind the three-point line, and they take 42 a game. And that, to me, is remarkable to see this team transition into modern-day basketball. But they still have kind of the old-school feel, meaning Gobert, the big, who's there to anchor and to defend and to get rebounds and put them back and hammer the rim. But they've mixed it, I guess is the best way to put it. They have a mix of old and new, and right now it seems to be working.
Okay, so let's talk about the two-time NBA Defensive Player of the Year in 2018 mm-hmm. and 2019, Rudy Gobert. It is hard to believe he is already, Craig, in his eighth NBA season. He has certainly strided out. I mean, he's grown so much as a player. But what have you seen from him as a leader within this team? I mean, how has he improved in that particular area?
Well, you know, he's not a verbal guy. He's not going to be out there in front of the media or the microphone. But he wrote a letter this offseason after he signed his near supermax contract. They had to go back and forth, and it went down to the wire. But he wrote an eloquent letter, and I think it expressed him best because he says, verbally, being from France, Elisa, with the maybe a little bit of barrier there with his accent, he mm-hmm. doesn't seem like he's as confident to express himself. But with this letter, man, it was eloquent. It thanked everyone. He's, you know, going through the COVID situation, through the growth factor of being a skinny kid, picked 27th, mind you. But he also wanted to know that the goal, the end game here, is a championship in Salt Lake City, which has never occurred. Now, the Jazz flirted with it twice with Carl and John back in 97 and 98. That's a long time ago. It's nearly a generation. So I was really blown away by the way he was able to connect back with the fans through a simple letter that was published. And I really gained a little bit more respect for who he is because it's hard to get to know the man, I think, because of his quiet nature. But yet he has a real fire that people don't know that really burns. He puts a chip on his shoulder every game. He doesn't like the fact he was taken 27th, and he wants to prove those who bypassed him wrong. He doesn't like the fact he was bypassed for his third consecutive Defensive Player of the Year award. So I like the fact that we may not hear him roar as much, but inside we know that he does have a real great fire and determination. And when you watch him play, you know, mm-hmm. he'll do his flex on occasion, and he really takes it personally to get the job done. He wants to be known as the best. And he's going to continue to work at it. Look, he has some offensive deficiencies, but he still is starting to show a little bit more ability to get to the rim, spinning out of some, you know, some defensive pressure and scoring. Last night, I thought he had one of his best offensive games of his career. But still, he's not a step-back jumper. He doesn't have three-point ability like Jokic does with the Nuggets. But, you know, there's just something special about a Rudy Gobert that you like. And you wouldn't, and I think most teams in the league wouldn't mind having him on the floor because he does change the pace of the game. And I'm going back to an old Jazz player you may know, Mark Eaton. Who
oh, yeah.
Never,
okay.
There's no stat about how you alter shots. But if there was, Mark Eaton at that time mm-hmm. was, and Kareem, and probably Shaq. And now you got Gobert. People going to the paint saying, no way. And they back away. So that alters the shot and the way the offense is run. And he's one of the best in the league to do it.
The Utah Jazz conversation continues with their play-by-play announcer, Craig Bowler Jack, after this quick break.
This is the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, welcome back. Hour 2, Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. I'm your host, Elissa Walker-Campbell. Many different ways to connect. You can always join us live on Twitter, at eRadioSports, or go back and listen to all of our interviews at podcastarena.com. Right now, let's rejoin the Utah Jazz play-by-play announcer, Craig Bowler Jack. You know, you pull back the curtain on Rudy Gobert's personality, and he really has had such a fascinating journey coming to a new country and getting acclimated. But also just a fun fact, I mean, he was an avid boxer growing up.
Yeah.
How has that helped him with the game of basketball?
I think a lot. I mean, you bring up a great point. I've watched him, and he's you know, for a big, you don't think they're coordinated or the feet may not work, but he's really kind of in tune with his body and really takes it seriously. I would not want to get into a ring or a three rounder with him. He's pretty quick handed,
yeah,
to be honest. And I think he's improved his feet. I think he's improved his base, meaning when you're that tall and he only weighs, let me double check it. Yeah, 245 at 7'1". A lot of times, you know, you get the bigs that go 280, 275. So he may give up 30 pounds on a given night. But I think he's helped with boxing to understand his feet and to keep his base, because he can get bumped off the block at times. And I think he's improved over the last couple of years with that. I really do.
Hey, good stuff. Craig Bowlerjack has been a very special guest, Utah Jazz play-by-play announcer. Give him a follow on Twitter at BuckleUpBowler. Always a true pleasure. Thanks so much for connecting with us. You stay safe, and we'll talk again real soon. We got our eye on you guys.
All right, you as well. Thanks for the time, and we'll talk again.
That, of course, was the Jazz play-by-play announcer, Craig Bowlerjack. A big thank you to all of our amazing guests and our lineup. We'll see you next weekend for the biggest, the best in sports, the Big E Sports Show. So long, everybody. Don't drink and drive.